Hi, I'm Elise.
And I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week we're talking about Season 5, Episode 16, Dr. Bashir, I presume? Teleplay by Ronald D. Moore and directed by David Livingston. Dr. Bashir, I presume, aired on February 24th, 1997.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Dr. Lewis Zimmerman arrives on Deep Space Nine to use Bashir as a model for his new long-term medical hologram. But his plans could unveil a dark secret that Bashir has carried since childhood.
Take a shot every time frontier right. medicine is said.
it's funny because it definitely goes, it's calling back to, you know, how excited Bashir was 5 years ago and why he came and whatever, but it's a fraught phase, but the show even knew that at the time because Kira had such a great reply to him in the pilot back then. All right, Elise, did you or did you not remember this episode?
I remembered the Bashir parts unrelated to the hologram. Like, I didn't remember how it came out, like, the new, the secret. And obviously, I remembered that Ram and Lita get together, but I didn't remember exactly how that happened either.
Yeah. Yeah, that it was like a reverse Casablanca situation.
yeah, a little less dramatic than Casablanca, maybe.
You know, there's a Loretta about not a plane, and he wanted her to not get on the plane instead of getting, you know, we're all fine teasing. Here now. How are you?
That gets quoted in my house like every other day by like all of me and my roommates, and it's very funny.
Yeah. Negative. We have a large reactor here. Very big, very dangerous. Have it under situation, under control situation, normal. How are you? Who are you? What's your operating number?
I do love situation normal, and then he just like fires the, destroys it, so he doesn't have to answer back. Yeah. Luke, we're gonna have company. Anyway, I should rewatch Star Trek that
soon. All right, the other Star franchise. Yeah, so the title of this episode, Dr. Bashir, I presume, is a reference to the famous, maybe apocryphal, maybe not quote, Dr. Livingston, I presume, which was allegedly uttered by Henry Morgan Stanley, the reporter for the New York Herald, who had gone to Africa in 1869 to find Dr. Livingston, who was out doing, air quotes, frontier medicine in the heart of Africa. So again, fun phrase, has kind of shitty colonial like, yeah. know, sort of backgrounds to it, but it is what it is.
Yeah. So I have to be a bit honest. I've been a little anxious to discuss this episode, like anxious about discussing it, not anxious to discuss it. There are a lot of like ableism issues that are dealt with in my mind regarding this episode. I don't know that they're dealt with in the episode at all. And that's not something I'm an expert on. I almost wish I had thought to like have Tessa come on because her dissertation or her PhD is very much related to this topic. Like, fixing your child's learning disability is kind of weird, you know? And I think it goes against things that we've been shown in Star Trek prior to this. Like, I think about in TNG, like, every time Geordi's, like, offered by some new person he meets to, like, fix his vision, he says, no, thank you. And obviously, this was not Julian making a choice for himself. It was his parents making a choice for him. So it's not exactly the same thing. But yeah, so like on one hand, I have a really big problem with what Julian's parents did. But on the other hand, this was a really interesting episode, I thought. And I found myself really engaged in it. And by the time the episode was over, I was like, oh my God, that episode felt like 2 seconds. Like I was really into it. I don't like that it permanently alters one of our main characters, but like I do think the acting in this episode is really good, especially Alexander Siddig. Like, he's so angry at his parents. And even though this episode is the first time we're hearing about this, the way he's acting really does a great job of showing this resentment that he's probably had towards his parents for like 20 years, you know? Like, if I feel it deeply. And I think that's due to his acting.
Yeah, it's, and I think like the drama of like this episode and kind of like the meat of it, like how it's trying to take it at like kind of, you know, face value and as it's presented as much, is like a really interesting example of how two things can be true at once.
Yes.
You know, and how 100%. Life exists so often kind of in this like grayness, right? Like, sure, you have, you know, legislated laws, you have like, you know, moral sense of like right and wrong, but it's like, what's, as a parent, what is best for your child and trying to discern that, and maybe it is and maybe it isn't, and then that child growing up into an adult and having these, you know, foundational memories and traumas and like also feeling and like reacting a certain way, and like the tension between that relationship rung really true and felt really true and genuine to me.
Yeah.
And like what hit me in this episode kind of in relation to that, and I mean, this is, it's not like a perfect like one-to-one comparison, but like it was Julian like choosing his new name because he felt like a totally like different person as a result of the genetic enhancements. And so it's like, that was Jules and this is Julian, and it's like totally not like a
I'm sure his birth name is Julian. Like, I'm sure that is the case. It's just that no one called him that, because, and so that felt like an adult name to him. Like, I'm a different person, and I just I agree completely.
Yeah, and whether it was or wasn't, I think both are like valid reads, but just the idea of like, you,
I'm not saying
you,
it definitely was. I have not seen his birth certificate or anything.
I don't think, you know what, in fairness, I don't think you could look it up if you wanted to. I don't think it exists yet. I don't think he's been born yet.
Fair.
But yeah, just, you know, even having like several people in my life who have like chosen their own names and are like going by their chosen names, but still having people in their life that either didn't know and were using, you know, a given name, and then going through that journey with them, like with their parents, and, you know, the parents trying, but then sometimes if they've been, you know, in a certain like state, it's the former name that like, and just, and how fraught that can be for like everyone, even like trying their best. So like that was what at face value kind of stood out to me the most. And I think that's such a powerful acknowledgement and like shift in the episode. Like, it's, maybe it wouldn't have read this way to me, you know, the first time I saw this episode 20 some years ago,
right?
Or almost 25, 30 years ago or whatever. Actually, I know it wouldn't have, but like the power of a name and what that can mean. Like,
I agree completely. I love it. I do want to talk a little bit about how they originally had like a different ending
idea for this
episode. I mean, I looked this up on Memory Alpha. I'm not just like sitting here doing a ton of research, but I thought it'd be really nice to share. So apparently, originally, O'Brien finds out that there were problems with the LMH, which is like what they were going to call this long-term hologram, and that Zimmerman had sabotaged it intentionally because he didn't want his EMH to be replaced. And then I guess Bashir had told O'Brien that Zimmerman was planning to reveal his genetic engineering secret. So like, obviously Zimmerman finds out anyway, but I mean, they don't really get into that. And so O'Brien was kind of just like, if you expose Bashir, I'll like tell everyone you fucked up the LMH on purpose. So it was a little bit of like a no secrets revealed, and we're all going to like keep this hush hush to ourselves. And I, one of the things that I really liked is that Alexander Siddig himself was like, I don't want to play a character that has a secret that only me and Bashir, me and O'Brien know, and like no, and the audience, and no one else on screen knows. Like, that felt wrong to him, because it would fundamentally change like how he, the character acted. And so he just convinced the writers that this, the secret should come out. And it sounds like that was the right call. He, I mean, he really got to do a lot of great acting in the episode, as I said. And actually, he wasn't pleased when he first heard that this is going to happen to his character. Like, literally, we just got over the whole, like, Julian's a changeling thing. This is a quote from him. I didn't know about it on Tuesday, and on Thursday the script arrived. We started shooting on Friday. I was so shocked. You know how you get the impression that maybe the producers sit down and talk about strategies and character arcs with actors, but this thing came out of the blue and pissed me off so royally. Like, you would think that they would say to an actor, hey, we're thinking of going in this direction with your character, when it's something so fundamental to who the character is. But they obviously didn't say anything to him until he read the script.
I do think the suggest, like, the changing kind of from the original, like, oh, everything's gonna swept under the rug before it getting known, and like, I guess, I don't know, like, spoilers, but not really. Like, one of my kind of favorite things is, like, because of how Sid wanted to approach this going forward, and not just have it being a secret that only he, O'Brien, and the audience knew, it is something that's kind of antithetical to a lot of, like, most Star Trek things, where it's like it would never get mentioned again. And this definitely, like, yeah, it doesn't solely become the only thing about Bashir's character, but it's something that's, like, out and acknowledged, and, like, you know, like, at the end of the episode.
I don't actually remember what happens relating to this in the future, so I had forgotten that it wasn't swept under the rug.
And it's not, like, a major thing. It just becomes, like,
a character flourish.
But it's definitely not, like, a forgotten about thing, because Sid didn't want to do it that way, and I think that was the right call.
Yeah, sure. I think this is too big of a thing to pretend that doesn't exist in the future.
Yeah, yeah. It also, like, kind of retroactive, and this is probably what partially, like, pissed it off, like, 5 years into playing this character. But, like, it, once you've seen this episode and, like, know this fact about Julian, going back and seeing earlier episodes, like, remember the one where he turns 30? And
not really.
He's, like, stuck in his own mind.
Oh,
and, like,
yeah.
It's like, and you find out that, you know, he was salutatorian, not valedictorian, because he, like, mislabeled a ganglionic,
like,
something.
Did he do that on
pre-ganglionic
purpose
nerve
now, to,
or,
like,
something?
Keep his secret hidden, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's in that episode, it's explicit that he did it on purpose because he couldn't handle the pressure or, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But now it's, like, it was one of those things, like, his game, like, retroactively, it's, like, one of those things, like, his games at the end where he lets O'Brien win, right?
Yes.
Like,
And that part is, like, obviously played for laughs, but I don't think, like, getting the answer wrong on a test for school is, like, as funny as, okay, maybe O'Brien and Bashir will just have two different starting lines for their darts game. Before we move on to the episode at large, I do want to say that I found a blog post on StarTrek.com about Julian's arc specifically, and character growth specifically, culminating in this episode. I think we'll post that link when we publish this, because I found it to be really interesting about how his character changes over the 5 years prior to that, this episode.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed reading that this morning. So we do have an A plot and a B plot in this episode, and they are related because Dr. Zimmerman is in both plots. I thought that was, like, kind of a fun way to connect the plots.
Well, when you bring in Bob Picardo as your guest star, as one of the, as being a series regular and the other show that's airing at the time, you better link him in both plots.
Right. And that's like, I mean, I was going to get into that a little bit more in the when we talk about Bashir, but like before we get into it, I will say, so Dr. Lewis Zimmerman is portrayed by Robert Picardo, who we all know and love as the EMH in Voyager. But in this episode, he's playing the creator of the EMH. And this is like the first time that we ever see like Robert Picardo as an actual like human person in Star Trek. Zimmerman is the director of holographic imaging and programming at Jupiter Station. And he created the EMH from his own likeness. And he is coming to Deep Space Nine to create a long-term medical holographic program with Bashir's likeness. So that's what Robert Picardo's up to. And I just wanted to get into that quickly before we get into our Rom and Lita section, because he does play a role in that as well. You may remember that we had a really interesting Worf does a fascism episode somewhat recently, where Lita and Bashir do their like unconscious coupling. That is not what I meant to say.
A conscious uncoupling or something?
Yeah, or whatever. They're like, let's break up, but like we'll have this last fling, I guess. It's a Bajoran custom. So Lita admits to having feelings for Rom in that episode, if I recall correctly. And Rom and Lita became friends during the events of the episode Bar Association, where they formed a union at Quark's, and it was really cute. So Rom is trying to work up the courage to ask Lita out. We know they both like each other. We get some really cute scenes where he's like trying to tell her, but I think he just is so nervous and he just keeps not doing it. But then Dr. Zimmerman sees Lita and he asks her out before Rom can muster up the courage. There wasn't like a ton going on with this. It was just like a lot of Rom being shy and not asking Lita out until he does ask her out. He doesn't actually ask her out.
No, he goes. That's just kind of funny. This is like so like, you know, whatever. But it's like he's so like nervous to ask her out. It's clear that like she likes him and she knows that he likes her.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's like, I love you.
I know. I kind of loved that. Like, you think they're just like gonna ask each other out on dates or like that's what they want, and then they both say that they love each other. Like, that's so serious. And I think it's great. I do want to speak a little bit about the speed at which Dr. Zimmerman is like apparently falling for Lita in this episode. It's completely bananas. They've had one date and then he says that there is a job on Jupiter Station to run a cafe, and that the job is hers if she wants it. Like, okay, Dr. Zimmerman, you do not own this cafe. How did you hook this up? Also, that's so fast. Like, I just met you. Come live with me, I guess. On Jupiter Station, where I'm the only person you will know. These are red flags to me. I thought that was really funny, though. It reminded me of that episode where Dax was going to like live on that planet that only came out every 100 years like go live with that guy that she just met. Except this was even faster. We do get a little bit of information via Quark about Rom's ex, Nog's mother, because Quark has just given Rom a hard time throughout the episode about this. And apparently Nog's mom, like meeting her, like basically ruined Nog's life. Rom's life, apparently. Like they, something with her dad and stealing, they took all of his money. So I'm like, oh, so that's why he works for his brother, or he worked for his brother for so long. He probably needed a job really badly.
Yeah. Yep.
And then at the end of the episode, after we've had several times of Nog, I keep saying Nog instead of Rom, it's several times of Rom trying to, like, tell Leeta how he feels and failing, he finally, as she's leaving, confesses his love for her and asks her to stay. And she says, "I love you too," and they kiss. And Dr. Zimmerman goes and hits on someone else immediately. So that tells you how serious Zimmerman was.
Yeah.
In our main plot, in order to make the LMH correctly, Zimmerman has to know everything possible about Bashir. He has him fill out this long questionnaire. He wants to interview his friends and family, learn his character traits and personality and quirks, because they're going to make the LMH in his image. Like, if we, like, you know, on Voyager, the EMH could be grumpy. That is Dr. Lewis Zimmerman's personality, apparently.
Yeah. Well, and I know we're a DS9 podcast, not a Voyager podcast, but I like this also, like, going, how, you know, going this back and, like, the idea of the EMH originally being based on, you know, Zimmerman, who we see in this episode and does, has been on Voyager as a hologram himself at this point, and then will now, like, you know, through techno babble reasons, will appear as a real person later on Voyager. But just how much the Doctor's, like, growth and growth is beyond his programming. There are, like, where the Doctor ends up, like, in his arc is very different from who Lewis Zimmerman is. It's just kind of like his starting point. So,
and it's, like, because they have different experiences as well.
Yeah.
It's great. And I really do wonder if at the end of Voyager, if Lewis Zimmerman is still alive and gets to, like, re-meet his EMH that was on that vessel. Like, that would be interesting for them to meet and see how different they are.
Yeah.
So, as mentioned, Dr. Zimmerman sees Leeta and is immediately, like, that Awuga, like, wolf with the eyes gif.
Yeah.
And Bashir's like, "Oh yeah, that's my ex." And Zimmerman's like, "Oh, I have to interview her, and that will be, like, dual purpose. Like, so I can get to know her and I can get to know more about Bashir."
I was just like, Zimmerman's being so, like, inappropriate and unethical in his research and, like, doing that. And even the fact that he's like, and she's like, "Any other questions? Like, have dinner with me tonight." It's like, that's...
Yeah, it's gross.
Zimmerman's kind of creepy. I think either Zimmerman's giving off sex pest vibes.
Yeah. Either ask her out on a date and have it have nothing to do with your job here, or do your job here. Like, don't... You can't do both. Yeah. It's weird. Or there's, like, a better way to do both. And that does equals maybe, like, at least being there for a week before asking someone out.
Yeah, I definitely have a feeling that the women of Jupiter Station have a whisper network not to be alone in the lift with Lewis Zimmerman.
Totally. Totally. Oh, my God. That's gross, but also probably true. I mean, the whisper network isn't gross. The behavior is gross.
No, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Ooh, I just got, like, a chill. Don't like it. So the first time that Julian acts a little funny in this episode is when the subject of his parents come up, and he explicitly tells Zimmerman to leave his parents out of this project. Do not interview them. Do not contact them. And immediately Zimmerman ignores this and is like, "Oh, I need to talk to these people immediately," and sends for Bashir's parents to come to Deep Space Nine. We kind of see a few people get interviewed, including Morn, who just, like, shrugs. And O'Brien, like, said all this really nice stuff about his bestie and is like, "Don't tell him I said any of this," which I think that's hysterical.
That's fun. It's like, are you sure Julian won't mention it? We'll find out.
Because it's so funny.
It's the setup for the joke is that he's going to, like, throw him under the bus and he's actually, like, just glowing about his best friend. It's so funny.
I know. He loves him so much. I mean, who wouldn't?
Yeah. I liked the way that scene was, like, kind of shot and edited. It was fun, but, like, also the way they kind of shot it all in, like, a almost, like, demi close-up. While they're looking straight down the lens, it's, like, Zimmerman's POV. Again, anytime a Star Trek episode does something that stands out to me from, like, a production, like, mm-hmm. standpoint, or like the way that they shoot it or whatever, just because there is such like a house style normally, like there is with most TV shows. I get excited about it, and this was vaguely close to, like, you know, how Jonathan Demme, the director, would shoot folks. And I just for your own, like, FYI, Elisa, if there's like a YouTube, like, supercut I found of a bunch of Demi close-ups scored to Goodbye Horses, nice. Jonathan Demme having done Silence of the Lambs, among
I'm going other things, to watch so that check after it out we're later. Done recording for sure.
Yeah,
I saw the link. So Bashir's parents show up, and it is like tension city up in here. I do think at first that Julian's like a bit hard on his father with regard to like his jobs and lack of career. Like, he's a little judgmental about it. And obviously this is before we know like the whole story, but like, I don't like, he's like judging him that he's basically judging him for like working at like what Julian would probably be calling like obnoxiously like a low skill employee type job or whatever. Which is not something that we endorse, because all jobs are hard. And it's just racist and classist. But yeah, so he's acting really weird towards his dad. And I just think it's like, it's clearly coming from somewhere deep inside that we just don't understand yet. He's extremely resentful toward his parents. And it feels, as I was saying before, it feels really well acted in that even though this is the first time we're hearing about this, like, you can feel the tension that has been building for years, even though you only have known about it for like 15 minutes so far.
Like, I don't know if like there's definitely that level of like judgment against his dad, but like, I don't know if it's so much like the type of work that he's done, it's the way in which his dad presents it as like, air quotes, like, more than it is, like, and even with, like, you know, trying to, like, impress, like, Dax and Cisco, and then it's even just continuing when it's just the three of us. Like, I think it's more the performative nature of his dad, like, you know, making the story, it's all about appearances. Like, it seems like it's a lot about appearances and, like, status with his dad, and so, like, with him knocking him down, I don't know if it's, like, a judgment on what jobs he's done, it's more as, like, nothing seems good enough, and like the idea of like the shame that Julian carries about his perception of why his parents made the choices that they did to, you know, when he was six, right? That's where my read of that coming from was. But
I think that I'm maybe clouded by the fact that I see the way that Julian's talking to his parents, and I have definitely talked that way to my mom at least, and so I'm like overanalyzing it because it like feels very familiar. And I don't mean to say that I've like treated my parents as like shitty as what Julian is saying to his parents, but like, if anyone talks back to their mom, it's me. Like, you know, like, that is just our relationship. So I just think I was like a little bit like I was being hard on Julian, as if I would have been to myself, opening up a little bit there to our listeners, if that makes any sense.
No, it totally does. And like, I don't want it to seem like I'm excusing the behavior.
No, I didn't think you were. I think
it's not a nice way to like talk to anyone, but it just felt,
I think your read on the actual like reasoning is more sound than what I was thinking. That's all. I'm just saying, I think you are correct.
Well, and like, full disclosure, like, I am also projecting. Like, that's the idea of like, aren't the idea of like internalized shame and like,
that's how... what we do this podcast for, so we can project our shit onto our favorite show. I mean, obviously. Right?
Exactly. but the idea of like how powerful shame can be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even informing like, Jillian's like, I just want to go quietly, I'm gonna resign, like, not to like jump too far like to the end, but like, yeah, because his dad's like, we're gonna fight this to the Supreme Court and blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
And like, Julian's just like, I don't want to deal with all of that, and just wants to like rip the band-aid off and have it be done with. Before we get to that point though, there's an interesting thing that happens, which is how we know about the secret. Julian's parents feel guilty about the conversation the night before and go to like apologize to Julian, but they're accidentally apologizing to the LMH, not Julian. So they say the big secret, which is that Julian was had a DNA resequencing when he was six, because they were finding that he was not learning as fast or as well as he was supposed to be at that age, according to their, you know, they have statistics on these things, I guess. And they felt that it was really hard for them to watch their son struggle, and they wanted to take that away, the struggling. So yeah, so that gets said, and O'Brien and Zimmerman are like in the other room, and they hear all of this. So this is the part of the episode where I'm like, I find it interesting that someone would do this, but I also find doing this very ableist. I know learning disabilities are tough. I mean, I know that, I don't know that from experience, so I don't know it as much as other people. But I just, from having friends that have learning disabilities, I know it's not easy. And I'm not an expert on this. I just think that this almost implies like it's not okay to be born with a learning disability. I don't think the show's like trying to say that, but I think when you go and just flip a switch and fix this type of thing, it's really complicated. And this is where I'm like, I'm no expert on ableism, but just if something feels off about it for me.
For sure. And like, I think this too is where like talking about like the idea of like acting out of shame, mm-hmm. Because like Julian's view is that they did this because of, you know, the way his dad wants to meet certain like external societal metrics, right?
Mm-hmm, and for a show,
and Jules was falling behind.
Yes,
air quotes falling behind. But I can't remember Julian's mom's name, but she talks about
it down
how
somewhere.
Hard
it
was
starts
to see
with an A, and I can't remember what I. It's like Amisha.
How what it's
or something.
Like. Yeah, what it's like as a parent to like have watched Jules struggle and staying up at night wondering if she did something wrong during her pregnancy, if it was, you know, if she had passed along. Like, and like, well, that's not a great way to like probably to like react to your like neurodiverse child.
Right.
It's also very real and it's also very human, and like I've never been a parent. To
right,
my knowledge, you aren't either.
Yes.
But based on my understanding and like, you know, folks I've talked to and like whatever, it's like as someone who like when you are a parent, if you can just like wave a magic wand and like have your child be air quotes like not have to struggle with that, I think a lot of parents would something they'd seriously like consider about. But like, yeah, where it gets complex and messy with those real human feelings is the idea of, and I'm being a little twee here maybe with things I shouldn't be, but it's like genetically enhancing your son to be on one side of the spectrum to the other.
Right.
He's still got a touch of the tism, but it's just different.
Yeah, it's really complicated. There's an interesting conversation between O'Brien and Julian after this, because O'Brien's kind of like surprised to hear that this is true when the two besties finally talk about it. And Julian's really angry because I think in that moment, he's just like upset that his secret is out, and he's like acting as if for like a second, he thinks like they set his parents up to just like say stuff. And I think this was completely an accident, and I don't think that anyone was like trying to trick his parents into like speaking to the LMH. But I really do.
Yes and no. Like,
you think so?
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Well, they want it like, this is where again, I think the research is incredibly unethical. But they didn't know what was going to be said, but they weren't clear with the parents, didn't know that they were being, that it wasn't. It was the LMH, and that like O'Brien said Zimmerman wanted to like test it as a like, you know, what
oh,
how
right,
will the hologram deal with Yeah.
Right? I think it is more on Zimmerman than O'Brien, though, because I think O'Brien's just kind of doesn't know a ton about what they're doing and probably is just helping or whatever. I had forgotten that he said that. So, yeah, maybe Zimmerman is a little shadier than we thought. And we already thought he was shady. I did like the where the conversation goes between Miles and Julian because, like, you know, a friend could be like, oh, no, this is illegal. Like, fuck off. I want nothing to do with you anymore. Or a friend could be, like, reassuring. And Julian is just, like, really... Julian has shame, too, because he thinks all of the good things in his life are because of this genetic enhancement and not because of who he is. And Miles is like, your compassion and your personality are you. Like, Miles is such a good friend here to him. And it's true. It's just, like, really clear that these two, like, love each other so much. I love episodes where they're interacting. Like, their friendship makes me so happy. And I just, in general, like how everyone that knows Julian, I like how they all react toward him. It's just a testament to how far he's come as a character. And this is mentioned in that blog post I was talking about earlier. But it just, like, even though I don't like this revelation, I really do like that, like, all of the people in his life, like, trust him and, like, love him. It just makes me happy. And that is not because of a genetic enhancement. So now the secret is out and Julian and his parents have to, like, figure out what to do. So Julian's going to tell Cisco in the morning, and, like, not take the fall, but, like, take the consequences, you know, of it. And when he goes to Cisco in the morning to tell him everything, Bashir's dad, like, already had talked to Cisco and took full responsibility and he made a deal. There's, like, an admiral and a judge there that are, like, on Zoom, basically.
It's the last time we see the three-dimensional hologram communicator thing.
Yes. That is the last time. Because they said it was, like, too expensive or too much of annoying to, like, it was hard to use. I vaguely remember. I was talking about it recently. So, yeah, so Bashir's dad's going to go to prison for 2 years and... In exchange, Julian can keep his medical license and his commission. And Julian's, like, arguing with this at first. It's very clear that, like, it sucks and, like, you know, no one should be going to prison. But, like, Julian gets to continue being on our favorite TV show. So that's nice. And it's interesting they do mention everyone's favorite genetically engineered villain at one point. The Admiral... is like, yeah, Julian, like, you're great, but for every Julian Bashir, there can also be, like, a Khan. So that was kind of, like, I guess they just, like, had to remind us, like, why this was a problem.
Yeah.
I really liked the scene at the end, just, like, with the darts and, like, Miles just realizing that Julian had been letting him win occasionally. And when he doesn't, he just, like, gets bullseye every time. So Miles is like, you can play from back here, and, like, probably steps, like, 6 feet back or something.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything else. In kind of... Yeah. No.
Jinx. No, I don't. All right. Now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water, first being mentioned by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek and Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. Also a possible reference to Alta from Altair 4 in the MGM film Forbidden Planet. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
Ramen Lita, baby. I love their relationship.
Not a fan of the Quark sexual harassment, but...
No. That was not great. Yeah, there's one scene, if you haven't rewatched the episode, where, like... Quark tries to convince Lita that Rom needs a woman with brains, and she's like, I have brains, which she fucking does. Fuck you, Quark. And Quark's like, yeah, have those men go look at them, like, basically saying, yeah, you have boobs, not brains. Fuck off. Lita's a smart lady. And even if she wasn't, you don't talk to her that way. Do you have a different
No.
Thirst?
No, I don't. What, I think I might have ruined your most Star Trek thing.
Did you? I don't think so.
Oh, no, just, okay, no, sorry, that was your other note when we talked about ending.
I did that already.
Now, Elise, what's your nominee? What's your nominee for the most Star Trek thing about the episode?
I think just ending with the joke at the end of a serious episode, like having the whole thing about Miles and Julian playing darts and like being able to joke about the serious thing that was like a secret until now. And now Julian's like at the point where he can joke about it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Mine would be kind of like a little in-joke or whatever, a reference to production. So Louis Zimmerman is named after longtime art director and production designer for the franchise, Herman Zimmerman. So that's my nominee.
Love it.
All right. Elise, until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find links to my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. And you?
Yeah, you can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd and at Maddie Hugh, M-A-T-T-Y-H-U-G-H. You can catch me on us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at Podrace. And you can email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for Interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.